This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
Listening to the DGP with province writer Dana G.
Hi, welcome to the DGP with me, Dana G. Now, I'm just wondering, are you good with critters? And when I mean critters, I mean critters from bed bugs up to moose. Because if you are, there's a dream job in your future, or potentially a dream job in your future. Billy the Exterminator, you know, the guy from the hit A&E TV show? Well, he's going to be shooting another show coming up, and he's going to be focusing on Canada and issues in Canada. So he right now has put it out there. You can check for it online. He's looking for a sidekick. You've got up until September 30th to apply, but we've got Billy here on the episode today, so we'll talk to him and talk about how you can get that gig, what you need to do, and also, you know, about some critters he's come across. Also sort of sticking with the reality TV vein, the second part of the show, we've got the Property Brothers, you know, those two hunky twin brothers, Drew and Jonathan Scott. Well, they're here talking with us, and what they've got going on is the fifth season of the Property Brothers show just launched back on W. You can see that on Monday nights. They've also got a new show coming out in the fall where they reno their own ranch. They've got a new app that they're pushing. So we just thought it was a good chance to catch up with them and talk about, you know, real renos. You're not that like crummy MDF board with sponge painting. Why is there always sponge painting? Anyways, we're chatting with them today. And we've got Jim Gordon from CTV here to talk about new movies, including the super cool new IMAX version of Everest. So let's get started and check in with Billy the Exterminator. Well, hi, Billy. Thanks for joining us today on the DGP podcast. You know, you just said before we went started recording this that you were in Illinois just coming back from a bat job. Now, I have to tell you, I've interviewed a lot of people in my life, but I've never had them say those words. What exactly is a bat job?
just like it sounds, it's a house or a property that has bats in it. What my job is to get the bats out of the structure safely for the animal and the inhabitants in a home. And I just left a couple who was having that issue, and I come up with a plan to get the bats out for them.
That you just sort of touched on a point I think fans of your show get, and maybe people that just see the name Billy the Exterminator think that you're going in and you're going out of your way to wipe critters out. But your whole philosophy is to get them out safely and to relocate them, correct?
Absolutely. You know, I can't really I haven't seen too many times in my life where an animal needed to be put down unless they were injured by an auto, a truck hitting them or something like that. But in most cases, the animal has a right to life and should be relocated and respected that way.
Before we go any further, too, I have to tell you, one of my colleagues here at the newspaper is a big fan, and she told me one of the things that she thinks about that if she needs to smile or feel better is about you extracting a group of baby raccoons and how one of their defense mechanisms is to cover their eyes up.
Yeah.
Apparently that's the cutest thing in the world.
It's adorable, you know, and the raccoons will be keeping a family up for weeks, and just and the homeowner will be angry, and then you see them baby cute raccoons, and it just melts your heart.
Well, that's one of the beauties of nature. Now, one of the reasons we're talking today, we're going to talk further about your career and what you get up to, but we want to talk about the fact that you are going to about to start a new show, and you're looking for a sidekick, and you're sort of casting the net far and wide. Canadians are definitely on the list, right?
Absolutely. You know, I need somebody that kind of knows the area very well. You know, kind of, there's a lot of, even in the United States, just localized pests and problems. So it's good to have a native there, you know, help out.
Well, tell me, you're saying a native, tell me a little bit about the show then. I don't know anything about, what's the plan for the new show?
Well, I've been getting a lot of mail down south, south of the United States there, but a lot of mail has been coming in from the north, and a lot of the jobs have been very interesting. You know, big beaver jobs, you know, loose moose running through neighborhoods, things that sound challenging. So I thought I would start tackling kind of some new stuff, get a partner up in the area, and I'm looking for somebody that is bold, not afraid of animals, love animals, and somebody that I can work well with. And we're trying to find somebody to do that right now. We have a submission form that you can go online and sign up to try to be a part of the show and learn something and help me out.
And we should tell people, I guess you go, that's crazyforcritters.ca is where they go?
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly where you want to go. And if you've got a bold personality and you think you'd work well with me, please sign up.
And if you're not afraid of moose or cougar...
Exactly. or big beavers damming up. Because, sometimes you got to swim with them things. I mean, Canada with that cold weather, I'm starting to become more afraid of the beaver jobs.
when are you going to start shooting this? And do you have, like, a location set up?
No, not yet. Right now, we're just kind of trying to find the right personality to work with and go from there. We're also gathering jobs, starting to look at different jobs that that I could help out and might be good to film entertaining for people to watch.
I think you swimming into a beaver dam is probably the winner so far, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you'll have to get yourself a wetsuit. The water's a lot colder up here than in Louisiana.
I know.
let's just talk a little bit for the people that don't know much about you and haven't watched the A&E show. How many seasons have you had now of Billy the Exterminator?
I believe 6 seasons at 88 episodes, and then I did some dirty jobs with Mike Rowe, 3 episodes.
Right. Well, while we're there, what was the dirtiest job then for you?
Meaning my career? Probably a bat job I did on a Catholic church. I had to remove 3 feet of guano that took me about 6 weeks to do. That was the worst.
Ugh. You think you would have got some help from a higher power for that one?
I know I needed it for sure.
Billy, tell me a little bit about the sort of the evolution of you from, you're obviously an exterminator by trade and you've been doing this for a long time. How did you end up on television? Who found you? What was the tipping point for you to become this big TV star?
Great question. Down in my area, we have some slow news days and I contacted all the companies in the area, and I said, look, if there's anything that's aggressive that you guys don't want to do that you think you'll get hurt, send it to me. I'll do it because I was a new startup business. I was hungry and struggling for work, so I decided to take on the jobs that other exterminators refused to do. However, the news in the local areas, like I remember one job, honeybees were swarming on some cars on a hot summer day, people coming out of a grocery store, their meat is thawing out, ice cream melting, and they couldn't get to the cars because of all the honeybees. Well, that also will attract that kind of story in local media. So when I respond to these jobs, the media would show up, film it, put me on TV, and eventually a Hollywood producer typed in looking for kind of a Punisher-type character in Extermination. It was fronting the Skull and Crossbone logo, typed in Skull and Crossbone Exterminator, and all this news footage and some newspaper articles and stuff came up on me, and they're like, that's our guy, that's the guy we're looking for, because it was real, natural, and not artificial, not something contrived in a television studio.
Now, once the TV show started up and running, did your business see a big upswing?
It did pretty much, not locally because it's such a small market, but it did increase, with the fans calling in. People with different types of requests, mostly looking for help with their own situations. So that's one thing I like about doing the job is, helping people not only in my local area, but the viewership as well.
That's sort of interesting. You've sort of become like a designer exterminator. If someone calls you from, out of state or even across the country because of who you are, I guess your work on your show is your best calling card.
Yes, ma'am. And, you don't have to have a license to offer to go to a different country or a different state and help out. There's always a local guy there that's got a license. But if they have an issue and they can't find a solution to it, you know, I think I'm your guy. You know, I don't want to say I'm the best exterminator in the world, but I do want to say I haven't met my match yet. And I know that's, you know, a tall order. I don't want to sound arrogant or anything, but I think that's why people call me, is I always find a solution.
So you've never turned down a job?
Never, and I've never failed at one.
Never failed. No critters outsmarted you.
No, the only failures I've had have been from either a misunderstanding from the person I'm working with or a monetary issue. But no, if I'm left to do it my way, no, I don't fail.
Do you have to tell me, when you people call in with jobs and they say this is what they need, what is the one job that will always make you go, oh, God, I don't want to do that?
I don't like doing bed bugs. They actually creep me out, believe it or not. And I don't like doing moles. You know, the ones that tear up the yards and, you know, will burrow under the grass, because people spend a lot of money on their landscaping. And moles are very difficult to trap and rid landscaping of. So you can get a lot of complaints with those. So I don't like them.
How many years have you been doing this for?
28 years. I'm an entomologist, and I've been doing wildlife for the full 28 years also.
And what's changed in your business from 28 years ago to now?
You know, I guess the biggest thing is just getting used to the extra attention. You know, early on in the industry, it can be real stressful dealing with a rattlesnake or something. It's even that much more stressful when you've got cameras on you and all the attention and so many people that can criticize your work. You know, so we had to grow that way, you know, learn the parameters of the chemicals that we use, what can be used on camera and off camera, those kinds of things. But, I mean, it's, I guess to answer your question, we've had to get more media-minded, more PR conscious.
Which is, I imagine, is not a thing, didn't cross your mind at all when you started out.
No, not at all. Benton, Louisiana has 2,000 people in it. I was wearing the black skull and crossbone shirt because I pretty much cleaned up dead rats for a living, and I didn't think anybody cared how I looked.
Mm-hmm. What have you got for pets?
A Persian cat. I like cats. I've had just about everything for a pet at one point because of the nature of my work. You know, I'd catch an animal and hold on to them for a few days, sort of. You know, real familiar with just about every kind of animal, but I like cats.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, people are listening to this. We just sort of had a recent news story here. There was a deer in a Stanley Park, is a big, beautiful park here in Vancouver, and a young deer that typically people began to feed, you know, pay attention to, and it didn't, you know, it didn't back away from people. It didn't have that respectful fear of people, and subsequently it was hit out in traffic. So I'm just wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about the importance of keeping animals wild, or keeping that distance.
Yeah, absolutely. It's natural to want a free meal. If you're feeding animals, you're doing them harm because you take their instincts away of wanting to hunt. They get lazy. Our foods aren't always the best for them. And, of course, like that deer getting hit, you know, they drop their guard. They get more comfortable around autos, you know, cars, mm-hmm. and people, and they can get hurt. They're not supposed to be living in our environment.
I guess you probably see that a lot, that common sense isn't so common in your line of work.
Well, you know, you're right about that, but people got to live, and, you know, they like to feed the birds and stuff, and they don't think about while they're feeding the birds that the rats are digging burrows there and, you know, tearing up their garbage and bringing in diseases. You just don't think about those kinds of things. And, you know, that's where I come in. That way you can feed the birds, and I'll deal with the unwanted stuff, the rats and all the things that keep us awake at night and put a dent in our wallets.
Well, the interesting thing now, we're a city that's increasingly going greener and greener, and one of the things is everything's being composted. So there's a lot of issues attached with that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, compost is going to bring in all kinds of animals, you know, birds and raccoons and skunks and rats. I can go on and on and on. So, yeah, they're, you know, there's going to be a need for a lot of education with these composts and how to properly keep a compost and keep the critters out. And, you know, we'll try to cover some of that in our show.
Yeah, that's probably a couple of episodes for you, because it's really changing here where we are. Now, Billy, Adam, the engineer that's sitting in here with me, before I told him we were going to talk with you. I instantly, of course, need to ask you a question about wood bugs. I seem to have wood bugs in my house. You know, those ones that end up rolled up into little balls? What? Do you have those where you are?
Yeah, they're called sow bugs or pill bugs. I haven't heard the term wood bugs, but I believe you're talking about what we call sow bugs.
Mm-hmm. What do I do about that?
Yeah, it's a moisture issue. I would look at exterior watering, look at the gutters on the outside of the house to make sure that you're getting proper drainage away from the house. You know, see if sump pumps are needed, French drains on the outside, but usually those are a moisture issue.
Well,
we're talking about the right insect.
Yeah, well, we are in Vancouver in a rainforest. So now Adam has a question for you. Adam, hang on a second. He's just going to put a mic on. Adam lives in an apartment building in downtown Vancouver. So, Adam, here's Billy.
Hey, Billy. I'm on the 7th floor of an apartment building, a concrete apartment building in downtown Vancouver. And for some reason, just within the last 3 or 4 months, I've discovered these tiny little ants floating around inside my apartment. Any idea how I could get rid of those? I've tried the little cans with the ant trap, you know, the food that they supposedly bring back to the nest and stuff, but that doesn't seem to be working.
What color ant are you dealing with? Is it a little yellow one?
It's so small, it's almost too hard to tell, but it looks black. It looks quite dark. It's so tiny. They're really, really tiny.
Gotcha. I would keep going with the baits. I would probably say it's the little black ant, but I'm not sure without seeing it. You know, usually the outside needs to be treated for something like that, but you're too far into a building, too high up, so you're only going to be left with baiting. I would keep going with the ant baits. Just put a lot of it out. You're dealing with a big building. You're going to have a lot of these ant colonies throughout the entire structure, and unfortunately you're only dealing with one unit in a very large building, so you're never going to get control unless the whole building is on board. But if you keep some steady baiting out in your unit, you can keep the number reduced or the activity reduced.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Billy, before we let you go, should just let people know they can go to crazyforcritters.ca to apply to try to win the spot of being your sidekick in a new show coming up. Do you have a name for the show, or is it going to still be Billy the Exterminator, just focusing in Canada?
No, we want to revamp, do a completely different show, so it'll have a different title, different look, different characters. We're trying to shake it up and do something different.
Okay, and we should let people know that the application process is open until September 30th, so they should get right on that. And just to give some people that are applying, if you could give them a couple of tips of things you're looking for, give a bit of heads up. What's something that you'd really look for in a person as a sidekick? Their own fancy costume? Does that help?
You know, it doesn't hurt. But, you know, I like big, bold personalities, a lot of self-confidence, and I keep saying somebody I can work with, and that's key, you know. I don't want a bold personality with somebody I can't work with. So, I mean, people have watched the show, you kind of get a feel for what my personality is like. If you think you can work well with me, and you've got a good personality and a love for animals, that's my candidate. That's who I'm looking for.
Awesome. Billy, thanks so much for chatting today.
Sure, thank you.
All the bugs are marching in the bug parade. All the bugs are marching in the bug parade. Big ones, little ones, fat ones, skinny ones came today. Oh, all the bugs are marching in the bug parade. Well, there were ladybugs, and there were doodle bugs, and there were June bugs, and there were...
Alrighty, that was Billy Bretherton, a.k.a. Billy the Exterminator. Now, remember, you can... throw your name into the hat and try to become his sidekick. It'd be kind of a cool job, actually, because he seems like a really nice guy. You can go to crazyforcritters.ca to sign up, and give it a go. Okay, next on the big show, the big shoe, is we've got the Property Brothers, Drew and Jonathan Scott. So let's check in with those two popular guys. Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott, thanks so much for joining us today on the DGP. You guys, you said you just landed in Nashville, one of your many journeys, I guess.
Well, we are, Jonathan and I are huge country stars. You may have heard our latest album, so we're down here recording. It's called My Dog Left Me and My Mom, no, I got nothing.
Yeah, I get. Well, good. I wouldn't, but here's the weird part. I wouldn't be surprised if you did something like that, put it that way, with your resume being as long as both your legs put together, right?
We should be 90 years old and mess up. We are actually down here recording two songs, though. We have a new show coming out around November, and it's called Property Brothers at Home on the Ranch. It's us renovating and making over an old family friend's ranch in Alberta. And a part of this is showing where we grew up, a bit of our background. And we actually used to sing and play the guitar with my dad. And so we actually wrote two songs for the show. So that's going to be something new and exciting for our fans to see.
Like, okay, wow. So that was my joke was actually true. Okay, so let's just back it up. You're going to have another... Just back it up a little bit. So November, that's another new show, Property Brothers Down on the Ranch. Is that what you said?
Property Brothers at Home on the Ranch.
At Home on
the second season of Property Brothers at Home, which was the renovation on our house in Vegas.
Right.
Everybody loved it so much. They loved my parents and the family all being in it that we've done another one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be finishing that up pretty soon, and it'll air later this year.
It'll air later this year. Okay, so we'll look for that one. Just speaking of the house in Vegas, are you both still living there?
Yeah, we're both there. My girlfriend and I are actually going to start house hunting in L.A. this month. So that's a little tidbit of information no one else has. But Jonathan, he gets back to the house in Vegas a couple of times a month. I typically only get back there about 3 weeks a year because I'm always on the road.
Right, but you're going to keep it for a while.
Oh, I'm not selling that house.
Yeah.
I love the house, the yard, the water slide.
Yeah, it's pretty trick, that
we
one.
We used the water slide a week ago.
You used the water slide a week ago. Well, that's good to know. One of the reasons I want to talk to you guys today is the fifth season of the original show is happening. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's amazing to me that the show took off as fast as it did, and we still find ways to evolve it and change it and make it even better. So tonight on W Network is the start of season five, and we have everything. We have bigger renos that we're doing, more exciting things. Of course, you always come across the same kind of problems, but it's a different solution every time.
Does it become, because that was going to be one of my questions, is it sort of the same, do people make the same inherent mistakes? But also, as you do a new show or a new series, I mean, just going to the Home Depot or whatever, like it amazes me the amount of choices now that we have. So is that what you mean by that? Each time you go and do these things, that there's been updated things you can use, ways to fix it? Is that part of it?
Well, yeah, the construction technology changes all the time. So we try and stay on top of that, and we introduce new products that we think are great that are going to catch on. Fortunately, I'm in a position where as a designer, a lot of the decisions I make start to become trend, and people choose to emulate what we've done. So yeah, I like the fact that there's a lot of selection out there. If you know what you're doing, absolutely. There's not just one right way to do a design. It's something that can be your taste. And Jonathan and I always tell people, you know, we want them to steal from our shows. We want them to take our designs. That's the whole reason we're there. We air in over 140 countries now, and so it's actually kind of fun for us. Even when we travel abroad, we have people that that tell us we inspire them in their homes.
Well, then let's turn the tables a little bit. What or whom inspires you guys for design?
I think one of the big things for us, when we travel, we like to take a little something from everywhere we go. So whether it's commercial design, whether it's European architecture, we travel the globe and we always take a little something back with us. It's nice to fuse different styles to give you a more unique design. And it gives you character. It gives you something to talk about in your design.
What is the modern estate these days? What are you hearing from people, or what are you wanting to push more and more of?
You'll see a lot of transitional designs. People, they want something that has the function and the sleek look of something modern, but also has a lot of rustic elements mixed into it. A lot of that sort of shabby chic.
Are people, in the five seasons now that you've done this show, is it become easier to convince people to take on a big renovation now that they see what you can do? And also, you know, there's so many resources out there now.
Surprisingly, no, it does not get easier.
Really?
Because everybody, I don't know if this is before the show as well and everything, but anytime I ever do up a wild design, what I think I can accomplish, everybody always says, no, there's no way. There's no way you can do that. And I think to myself, I'm like, have you not watched the last five seasons of Property Brothers? Do you not know? And the funny thing is, most of the homeowners we still get have never seen the show. We look for, ideally, we look for people who have never seen the show. We find them through local realtors. And it is getting harder and harder to find those people. But no, everybody still questions whether or not we can pull it off.
That's funny. You must have pretty thick skin by now, then.
Oh, of course. Yeah, definitely. Being around Jonathan, I have to have really thick skin all the time.
Yeah, you guys are unique that way, not just being brothers getting along so well over all these years, but business partners. What's the key to success between the two of you?
No BS. We have a no BS policy. If something's bothering us, we get it out. We don't let it fester.
Right.
I always find, though, I'll have amazing ideas. At least I think they are. And Jonathan will have the same. But together, once we hash things out, we always come up with a better plan. So it's a good way to work together.
Are you constantly, I know you said you took inspiration from, traveling the globe and looking at unique areas and design. But whenever you walk into a new building or somebody else's house, are you constantly renovating, decorating?
Judging.
In my mind, I was trying to be nice. I was trying to be nice. Judging.
I'm always seeing, like the way our 3D designs work on the show, that's kind of what's going on in my head. So I'm seeing colors change and materials change. But I don't walk into friends' houses and judge their houses, because some people are always worried that I'm going to run my finger along the tops of the doors and check for dirt and blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what I do. I'm not like that. But I constantly look at things and, find things. Wow, I think that's a great idea. I think I would like to do that in a design. And that's not such a good idea. I don't think I'll use that.
Right. Now, the people that you've got for this season 5 of renovating, I know you said it hasn't got any easier to convince people to do it, but are more people now, I mean, I don't know if it's because of the economy or the way that real estate is going, are more people now stepping back and thinking, okay, instead of moving into that, that slick track housing and stuff, that they have to actually really look at doing their own home over again? Are they at all? Are you hearing that?
Yeah, I think it's less about people being more confident with design. I think it's people being more cautious with their money. I think that's the main reason a lot of people are getting into fixer-uppers.
Mm-hmm.
They, there are a lot of people that think they're designers and contractors, and then they get into the thick of it and they realize it's harder than they thought. But we still try to educate. We try and let people know there are ways of doing these projects that are a lot more cost-effective, and also partnering up with a professional where they can do certain tasks and then you can do certain tasks is a great way to save money too. And nobody likes to move, so if there's possibly the potential in the house that you're currently in to make it your dream home, that's why we say to people, look at your place. Instead of looking at a million other houses, look at your place first and see if it could be the right house.
Right. What about pet peeves? You've been in so many houses and been looking at so many places to renovate. What is the pet peeve that comes up all the time that you see in homes?
When people put their toilet paper roll backwards,
well,
stop it.
That's
it goes over the top. It has to go over the top, unless you have a cat or a kid. Anyway, no, I'm just joking. I'd say when people do their own electrical plumbing or structure and they don't know what they're doing, it's incredibly unsafe. I've opened up houses, and one of the big ones is quite often when there's a second-story bathroom that somebody renovates or puts in, and they notch out all the joists, weakening all the structure right underneath the heaviest appliance in the house, right under the heaviest fixture in the house, the bathtub. When that is filled with water, I have seen in a house where the bathtub came crashing through the ceiling below. That is so dangerous. So people should not take on things that they're unaware of, and they should also make sure they always get permits.
Right. What do you like right now? What's trending, or what's a trend that you're going to be pushing in your new series that you were happy about?
In the new season, you actually see more technology. We're all about technology in the home, having a smart home, having a green home.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see more aspects of that. Whether it's your appliances, actually something that's not in the house, and we don't have an episode yet, but we go to CES. We see all the emerging technology. Something I'm looking forward to utilizing in the coming year or so, you have windows that you can actually digitally close with a finger. So you run your finger down the window and it digitally closes. So there's stuff like that I think is really cool for the home. That's a big thing. It's mainly through the appliances, or also having your house wired for, USB outlets instead of just regular receptacles.
Right. And when stuff like that, when you are verging on all this new technology, do you ever worry that it's not, you know, that it might be too soon, or do you take, do you put it in your homes first? I'm just wondering about, you know, something like a digital window. I mean, that I right away think, oh no, that's just something that's going to break.
Yeah, I definitely try and make sure that it's a technology I can see catching on.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done any of the digital windows yet on the show, but any of the other stuff like connectivity, you know, the USB ports, all of that stuff, I definitely think is going to become the norm. So, yeah, we look at all of those things, and then if, in fact, it is going to catch on, it's something that we'll put into it, or solar as well.
Right. Well, that's interesting to me, too, the solar. When new housing builds, I don't understand why solar isn't part of it now. Why?
The new thing, too, now is a lot of companies cover all the costs. So there's, because that was always the big,
it was expense,
people,
right?
Was the cost involved, yep, in putting solar in. Well, now, you know, yes, you have to sign a longer term agreement with them, but you can also port that to another house or have the next owner take it over. But yeah, the companies will pay for absolutely everything, pay for all the maintenance, and guarantee you a credit on your bill. And you're doing something good for the environment. So our house in Vegas is almost 100% run on solar.
Right, right. I mean, it makes total sense. Now, you guys have a long history with Vancouver. Lived here, hung out here, done business here. I just wanted to talk about, like, here in Vancouver, if you go out for dinner with anybody or lunch or anything and sit down and talk, the number one topic that comes up is the real estate issues here in Vancouver, meaning affordability is the biggest one, and things like that. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's an expensive city for sure. I mean, we've been investing in Vancouver since the 90s. We've continued right through the recession. It's an expensive city, and you have to know, if you're looking to do real estate investment, you have to know what type of investment you're trying to get into. I have some people that have tried the rental market, buying rental properties, and it didn't work out for them. I have other people trying to flip out there. It was too expensive for them. If you know what you're doing in whichever type of investment that you're getting into, then you'll be fine. We've made profits on every single property that we've ever sold, even when we were flipping through the recession. So it's tough, and it's not for everybody out there. And one thing we always tell people too, Jonathan and I don't believe, you don't have to be in the real estate market buying real estate. If your money is tight, people who are trying to stretch, they put a down payment on a credit card just to get into owning real estate. That's not the way to do it. It's better for you to rent. It's better for you to pocket some money until you're in a better situation.
When was the last house that you had in Vancouver that you sold, or do you have anything right now?
No, beginning of the year. We've been up in North Van and West Van. We've been continuing. It's for what we're doing for turnover property. That's sort of the better margins up there for us. But we've had property all over. We've gone all the way from Maple Ridge to East Van, West Van.
Right. It's pretty wild. I mean, I know that Vancouver's not the only city facing this. You know, they call them ghost cities and stuff. San Francisco is a really big issue with that now as well. You know, people buying up properties and not living in them and stuff like that. Do you think that, I don't know if you guys are the right guys to ask, but do you think there's going to be a change back to that? Or, you know, when people that actually work in the city can't live in the city?
I know it's a tough thing when you have a lot of international buyers in a city. It's the same in Vancouver, San Francisco, even New York.
Mm-hmm.
We just finished filming 7 months in New York. And that is tough. I appreciate that concern. I know there are certain, in New York especially, there are a lot of restrictions. The co-ops that they have there, they keep people from buying and not living in. They have to be there. You can't have these empty properties. And so it's tough. I think there's a lot of property in Vancouver and in the greater Vancouver area, and I think that there's still a lot of opportunity, even though you have international influence. I think people just start to make concessions for what they actually want, and I hate to see that. I hate to see that somebody, you know, at the end of the day can't come home to a place that's exactly what they need, exactly what functions for their family. So you do see a lot of people start to move outside of the city so that they can afford to get a little more space and a little more of those options.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I want to talk to you guys this morning, you've got an app now.
We do. Very exciting. We launched our very first app. Fans have been asking for it for years, and we wanted to make sure if we were putting out an app that it was going to be perfect for them, and we're going to continue to add features to the app. But now this helps people with inspiration, creating their own mood boards, how to, you know, do a budget tracker and set things up, and we have a ton of unique videos and tips and tricks that we put on there. So everybody should go on to the App Store, download the app. Right now, it's just for iPad. We'll be rolling it out for Android as well, and then iPhones, but it's awesome.
And it's called the Property Brothers Handbook, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
See, you've done your research.
Yes, I have. I couldn't open the app, though, this morning, but I think that's my – I was having some computer issues. But I saw the page for it. So, yeah, it's taken you a while to get this sorted. From the description, it sort of sounds like it's almost like a really great coffee table book with lots of information in it. Is that fair?
It's meant to have inspiration, so you can build a mood boards for your different rooms, what you're looking to do. We give you ideas of certain costs, certain ideas, tips and tricks to keep you away from certain heartaches you might have during renovation. So it's definitely a well-rounded app, and it's only going to get more. It's only going to get bigger and better.
And it's meant to keep you organized. So there's a lot of tips in there on how to keep you organized and pitfalls to watch out for.
That's a big key, isn't it, in the renovation process? That seems to be what drives or causes people so much stress, is the fact that things sort of get away from them, right? It becomes a big, overwhelming an overwhelming thing to do. So organization, I think, is probably the key, right?
Well, that's why it's so scary when someone tells me, oh, I'm building a house or I'm doing a massive, massive renovation. I'm going to be my own general contractor. And they have no experience doing that. That is the biggest red flag right there, because as soon as things become unorganized, if you're not a general contractor and you don't know what you're doing, you won't have other trades lined up. And if somebody doesn't show up, you don't have someone else that can jump in there and get the job done. As soon as things start to fall behind, you could see your reno budget inflate by 30, 40%. So it is so important to know what you're doing and stay organized.
Well, on that note, you're going to go and record some songs today. I'm guessing that as the Property Brothers, you know, then to defer to you have a good producer, engineer, you've got that all sorted. You're not going to go in and twirl the knobs yourself, are you?
We are working with a Grammy Award winning singer, songwriter, producer, Victoria Shaw. So we are set. She's worked with all the greats. Her and the other fellow Chad that we're working with, they've produced for Taylor Swift, Lady Antebellum. I mean, you name it, they've worked with them.
Well, you know what's interesting? There's a trend in country music now, bro country, right? You know, that like the Jason Aldeans and that. So you are, I guess, well-suited to be the bro country guys.
I feel like we were the original bro.
There you go.
Guys.
That should be the name of the single, the original bro.
We'll credit you for it.
Perfect. That's all I ask. Just give me a little bit of credit. Well, guys, thanks so much for talking today. Good luck with all this stuff. I look forward to seeing the ranch show. That looks like fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a great day. Bye.
No, I'm not leaving you behind, Doug. Come on.
Got a rest.
No, Doug. Come on. Come on with me. Only 10 good minutes, Doug. Come on. Please, Doug. Come on, man. 10 minutes. We get to the bottom of the step. Come on, this leg. This leg, Dougie. Come on. Come on. There we go. Where are you?
Alrighty, it's movie time here at the DGP podcast. That clip you just heard is from Everest, the new super big, spectacular film, which opens Friday, September 18th in IMAX, and then we'll have a regular rollout next week. The clip, the voices you heard speaking there were actors Jason Clarke and John Hawkes. They play a couple of climbers, really at the very, very important crux, I guess, in their descending Everest. They've just gone up to the top. They've been up there a little too long. They're just below the famed Hillary Step. And everything starts to go wrong. I mean, we're not Jim Gordon from CTV is sitting here next to me looking what? Spoiler alert for this. Well, if you're the one person that didn't know about the John Krakauer book Into Thin Air that I believe was published in 1997, which this film is based on, there's Krakauer characters in it. So this is the expedition up Everest that took place in 1996. It's two groups that sort of get stuck on the mountain together, and everything goes wrong. A big, huge storm blows in, and I think 12 people in total perished on the mountain, four in that expedition that you just heard them speaking from. So this is Krakauer's story. Jim, to start things off, did you read Into Thin Air? Were you?
No, I didn't. I knew of the story. I didn't read the book, but most of the things I discovered afterward came from you because you read the book, and I didn't know the story behind Hillary's Step.
Well, I didn't learn that from the book. I was married to an alpinist.
Wow,
a long time ago. Well, that's what you call it. Well, someone who spent a lot of time in the mountains. So when you watch the film and they talk about the Hillary Step, what it is, it's the last face of the mountain that you climb before you reach the very top. And it's called the Hillary Step because Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing in 1953 obviously climbed the mountain and were the first ones up. So they're free climbing it. And he was such a big guy and such a good climber, he could make that move across that face of rock in one move.
Wow.
And nobody else really could replicate that after. Like I said, it's a combination of his size and his skill. So hence the Hillary Step, which is all top rope now. I don't know. I sound like such a mountain nerd.
No, but it is. I mean, it's tougher to explain it. When people see the movie, you leaned over to me and said, "Hillary did that without the luxury of ropes and everything like that." That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So this, like I said, this film opens in IMAX on Friday the 18th, and I think I would highly recommend it to see this film in IMAX. Don't you think, Jim?
Oh yeah. I mean, you and I talk about a lot of movies on a weekly basis that you can see at home, VOD, DVDs, Netflix and everything. This is one of those old school movies you want to see on the big screen. As you said, Dana, it does open in full release next week on regular screens, but this is 3D and IMAX. So for our listeners in the Lower Mainland, you might want to get to the nearest IMAX theater, because this is just, it is a powerful film when you see it on the big IMAX screen.
Yeah, where the film wins for me is the look of it. Obviously, you're up in the mountains with these guys. And is unsentimental about what's going on. This is what happened. These are the mistakes that are made. And those mistakes keep getting made as Everest has been turned into basically a shopping center in the sky, because everybody's going up and down. You know, we were talking about it after we saw this film. I don't know who now says I went up Everest. Like, if I was at a dinner party and somebody said, oh, I just got back, I climbed Everest, I'd be like, oh, that must have been interesting. I wouldn't be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't strike me as such a big deal anymore, because as they point out in this film and as Krakauer point out in the book, there's people on that mountain that should not be on that mountain. They've literally paid $100,000 a head to get sort of carried up there.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't realize that you were up there for a very, very brief time. I mean, the plan was to be up there for about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
get your photos, get down. And we should mention that a lot of the experienced guides, including Jason Clark's character, perished up there.
Right.
And they point out, like, this is right at the beginning of the whole tourist part of this is a big
adventure,
right? Like, they point out there's one little moment in the movie where Jason Clark leans down and picks up like a candy wrapper and a beer can or something, and it's the commercialization of the, you know, there'd be like one person every 4 or 5 years would climb it. Now you got people going up by the thousands, and it's created this logjam, and that's part of the problem with the story. Yeah, so great cast in this movie. A lot of people in small roles, like Keira Knightley, and I always forget her name. It's Emily Mortimer.
Yes.
In that role. Jake Gyllenhaal plays
the character. No, Emily Watson.
Emily Watson, thank you.
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, and the guy that played
Hawks.
John Hawks. Face you may recognize. Great cast, and it's, I tell you, I'm not a big fan of heights, so I was, it was an uncomfortable at times movie to watch because of that.
Yeah, you actually felt the height in it.
I did when Josh Brolin, you may see in the trailer, actually gets stuck on that ladder that they placed across.
On the ladders, right at the very beginning, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little tense, but it's just, I don't know why people do that. I don't begrudge anybody doing it, but
no,
as you said the other day, it's all about now people with money that are looking for new thrills. I don't know.
I guess so. I don't know. And it's interesting that when you point out the part about the garbage in it too, it was good because they also show the bodies that the mountain, they just leave the bodies up there. You just get left there and somebody walks by you the next season.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought it was okay. I thought that, yeah, they did a great job as far as a mountaineering movie went. It was spectacular. It was, you were involved in it. You could feel the weather. I know it's the IMAX theater and the sound. You could really feel the weather. You could see also just sort of, you know, one thing I always find about mountaineering and stuff that always strikes me as odd, and why another reason I wouldn't want to do it, I just think, oh my God, you have to walk that slow and that deep of snow.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like any fun to me. I know I'm shallow.
No. It's a big commitment. At one point early in the movie, I think they're there in the Tibetan town and they're having their first night beers. And I think it's like April 20th and Jason Clark says, so the plan is May 10th. I mean, it's a big commitment. You're committing a couple months of your life,
and you
got to
live in base camp. And it's not like you're staying at the Chateau Four Seasons Tenzing.
Yeah,
it's like you're in some crappy tent drinking yak butter tea.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, the Nepal government has certainly realized they got a cash cow here.
Oh yeah.
And despite the amount of yearly deaths with this climb, it still is a really big draw.
Yeah, it's a huge draw. I mean, that is it's Everest, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I said, after Hillary, I'm like, okay, that one's done. I don't know.
It is true. I mean, not make light of it. It is quite an accomplishment, but still, there's just, I think I'd love to know the percentages of people climbing it now that really shouldn't be doing it. I mean, this movie, everyone that was there seemed to have the experience that allowed them to be there, I thought, in the movie.
Yeah, there was a couple. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I don't think there was anybody in
there.
Well,
there was the newscaster. You thought, oh, she's a red shirt. She's done.
She's a red shirt.
For
those of you that Star Trek, the red shirt.
But everybody in the movie seemed to have their own story, but they had at least some climbing
But they all made the mistake. You know, obviously there's a storm came in. You can't handle Mother Nature, especially when you're at 29,000 feet and change. But there's some really dumb mistakes made as well. So
It seems to be all money driven too.
You want to make sure, because they didn't want the people not to get to the top for their advertising for their next year's season.
That was my problem I had with the Jake Gyllenhaal character. Is you see these characters in movies all the time, a guy that should know better. Has the experience so much so that he almost has a casual attitude toward the mount. Respects it, but he's done it so much.
Right.
And he's making just tragic, stupid mistakes. So anyway, I still liked it. Eight out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I'm a little less than that. I thought they could have expanded on the characters just a little bit more. I didn't get enough out of them. But yeah, you know what? I'll 7.95.
It's a family secret.
Oh. Come on. You gotta tell me that. Come on, you could do it. Come on. What's the family secret recipe?
It's ground garlic and a little bit of soy.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
I thought it was a family secret.
It's your recipe.
No. No. You said to me this is a family secret. And you gave it up to me, boom. Don't look to John, because he's not going to help you. You spill the secret family recipe today, maybe you spill about me tomorrow. Is that something maybe that's a possibility?
So I was just saying.
You were just saying. Just saying gets people sent to Allenwood. Just saying could get you buried real quick.
Now, you're going to talk about a movie I didn't see.
Yeah.
With Johnny Depp.
That happens once in a while with us here, movie critics. Black Mass, if you've been anywhere near Entertainment Tonight or E! Or TMZ or anything, you know that Toronto International Film Festival is on, and always one of the favorites for anybody to take pictures of and comment on is Johnny Depp, which I don't know why, because he seems to always look the same, and literally look the same. He always has the same clothes on.
Yeah, he's got a look that he goes by and he sticks with it, doesn't he?
Anyways, Johnny Depp's funny. He's one of these guys that we keep forgiving him. He's made so many bad movies. Mm-hmm. Just the Pirates movie, after Pirates of the Caribbean number one, the rest of them, you're like, oh, dear Lord.
Oh, yeah. And he, like, say, De Niro and Pacino in their later years are making up for all the years they made movies for next to nothing. I mean, Depp, what, he's working on number five now, number four?
He's super rich. He's super rich.
But and what was his big hit this summer was that great video that went viral when he showed up as Jack Sparrow in costume in that Australian hospital, which is a beautiful thing to do. But you're right, he I tell you what, when I get interested to see him as in a movie like this, and you're going to talk about when he's playing a character, because anytime he just plays a leading guy, he looks like a little boy.
Well, that's the thing. He's through playing the Edward Scissorhands, all that stuff, the Pirates movie, and I can just think off the top of my head a couple. Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
He becomes just a really expensive character actor to me, right?
Absolutely. You're right.
And, you know, you seem to know more about him off screen. You know, he's marrying women half his age. Not that I have a problem. Yeah, I do have a problem with that.
And twice his height, from what I've
seen. And twice his half his age and twice his height. Yeah. You know you're rich when you can marry a woman half your age and twice your height.
Yeah.
That's an excellent.
We should copyright
that.
Half his age and twice his height. Well, there's only so many guys that can actually fit that. I mean,
Willie Shoemaker. okay, so this is Black Mass. So this is the story, the Hollywood version of James Whitey Bulger, who was possibly one of the worst gangsters in the modern era. If you look at it, just look at his rap sheet. He operated in South Boston, which are the southy part of town, which seems to be
which is not a pleasant area.
Which everything bad from Boston comes out of there, including the Wahlbergs.
Yeah,
they're
all
there to be blamed.
Sculpted and made them. That's
Starts out in the 1970s with Whitey Bulger, just a small-town crook, right? Small-time crook, doing some racketeering here and there. Not even big enough to get...
Moves up slowly, but steadily.
He's not big enough to even get the Rico guys to look at him. But he decides that he doesn't like the Italians, so quite a bit of racism in this film earlier on. But that would have been when the Celtics were all white. Come on, Boston sports teams. That's a whole other show. Uh-huh. They're shocked when Paris showed up. It's sort of his rise, but what really facilitates the rise in this, and which I'll point to, I'll talk about Depp in a minute, but which points to a performance that I thought was really great in this film, is that because these guys are Southies, you know, it's that whole, that, you know, keep your friends close, your honor among thieves, you're never a rat. Mm-hmm. You know, the worst thing in the world you can be is a rat is even worse than being a multiple murderer, I guess. In this world. So the FBI agent that comes back to town, a guy named John Connolly, played by Joel Edgerton, who's just on fire.
This guy,
oh, he's so good. Australian guy. He's an old neighborhood buddy of Whitey Bulger's, and more importantly, Whitey Bulger's brother, who is a state senator and played by Benedict Cumberbatch with a good Boston accent. They all do their Boston accents very well, very well.
Great cast.
The highlight of this has got to be Joel Edgerton, though. He really plays this sort of desperate FBI agent who sets up the heat, and he's doing time, I think, for murder and a bunch of other charges. He sort of sets up this relationship with Whitey Bulger, where he tells his FBI bosses that, listen, he's going to give us information about the mob, about the Italian mob, and so they think that's a bigger fish than these, you know, bent-nosed
Irish guys that are running
vending machines and, you know, holding up.
Well, I guess if you're looking at what fish do you want to go after.
So Bulger tells him that I'm going to give you some information, and he only actually gives them one decent piece of information. I won't give it away. In case you haven't seen, there's a fantastic documentary on HBO, and now it's probably on Netflix, just called Whitey. It was done last year. There's a bunch of information there. So anyways, long story short, the FBI guy doesn't get any real information from him, but what he does get from him is money, nice suits, nice gold watches. So he starts fabricating informants' stories and giving them to Bulger. Flash forward, it all falls apart. Bulger has to go on the run. And interestingly enough, we all know, everybody that watches the news, that Bulger actually remained at large for 16 years until a couple, what year was it? Hang on.
Two years ago?
Finally arrested in 2011, so 4 years ago.
In plain sight.
In Santa Monica, living with his girlfriend and a couple old dogs. And I think they found about $500,000 in his apartment. He was walking around, and they caught him. He's doing triple, quadruple time in jail, life in jail for, I think they had got him down for, he was indicted for 19 murders, which you probably, it's like when you see one mouse in your house, there's like 20,000 more. They figured that's 19, just the tip of the iceberg of this guy, because he's a bad man. Just a goon, right? Like a bully and a goon. Like, I know I use the phrase honor among thieves. There's no honor with this guy, like none.
Do you think, though, having seen this movie, because I loved the documentary last year, Whitey, was the movie needed?
No.
Yeah, I mean, a lot more people see this, I would imagine, than the documentary. The documentary, I thought, said everything that needed to be said.
There's just a lot of people there that are not documentary fans, or don't have the Netflix, don't have the HBO, so there's lots of reasons to miss it. It's too bad if you do have those things. But you want to see Johnny Depp in action, go to the movie first and then go to the documentary. Yeah. It's pretty close, the story. I mean, they obviously glamorize the stuff. But I think that whole idea of neighborhood and, you know, brotherhood is very much a part of organized crime as well, right? Let's talk about Depp, though. Come on. I know that you said it's great to see him like back as a leading man. He is, but again, he's under a pile of makeup.
No, I didn't mean leading man. When he is a leading man, it doesn't work. Transcendence with
Bridget
Hall and all this. He looked like a little boy. When he puts the stuff on, the makeup, the costumes, everything, that's the only way he can survive, I think.
Like this movie. Yeah, so this one he's fully covered over. He's got some weird contact lenses in. The weird part, though, I could get the hair and the makeup and stuff because the guy has a certain look, right? But he's got like this body padding on because Whitey Bulger has this frame that's like almost a bit feminine. It's weird. And he took to wearing really tight Wrangler high-waisted jeans. And I mean, I know it's the 70s. Yeah, you see a big chunk of the 80s. But even when it gets into the 90s, he's not really progressing forward in fashion land. He's still wearing, remember the Porsche sunglasses?
Oh God.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, that just sent you for a loop.
It really did.
There was a bad week in Cancun.
Yes.
I caught something.
Several.
I caught something, Porsche sunglasses. Yeah. But he's got this sort of body padding on, and I think that was just a step too far for me. I know I'm nitpicking. The performance is good. I think Johnny Depp's, he's good at what he does. Mm-hmm. He's good at becoming something else.
He swings. I mean, you can love him or hate him in roles like that. Yeah. When he plays a leading man with no makeup on, he's lost. The movie he did with Angelina Jolie a couple years ago.
The Tourist
was so painful.
He must have eaten all of Italy before he got on
camera. Yeah, but he swings for the fences in these character roles, and you got to give him credit. He doesn't do anything halfway.
Yeah.
Again, I haven't seen this, but anytime he gets into the makeup and the costume, he's more comfortable.
He He was okay. Honestly, he wasn't bad enough for me in this. I wanted to see him a little bit angrier. I know you're just trying to portray this guy. Maybe he is sociopathic. You know, the guy's kid died, and then his mom's. It's always, why are these guys in gangs and mobs always so close to their mothers?
Well, I think that says it all.
He said, "Lady Macbeth, if it's not one thing, it's your mother."
And the Macbeth reference also.
Oh, the Macbeth. Of course, yeah. You always got to go to be gone damn spot. Anyways, I thought it was okay. It didn't make me go crazy. I thought Jason Clarke's performance as John Connolly as the FBI agent was very good. Mm-hmm. Again, this is another star-studded affair. I forgot to mention Kevin Bacon's in this. Benedict Cumberbatch. Who else?
Jason Clarke too.
Yeah, and Jason Clarke.
He's a good actor.
Yeah.
Well, he and Joel have that. They're both Australian.
Sorry, right? I said Joel Edgerton. Did I say Jason Clarke?
Yeah,
sorry.
Joel.
Joel Edgerton. Yeah. Okay. As
he's real. We loved him in The Gift this past summer. If you haven't seen that, folks, it should be on VOD now. He's just on a roll right now. Always works.
So, yeah, well, one thing I can say about this week, though, and I'm so happy, is that we are back on track for decent movies. Mm. We had that about a month and a half of, you and I are just looking at each other.
Well, every week we go on TV and you got nothing good to say, or this is another average movie, this is another... not bad, not great, but yeah,
we're starting to sound like a crank. I said, I feel like people are going to hate me even more. You know, you don't like anything. It's like, oh, that's so not true.
I hear that all the time from people. Yeah. It's like, I always try to find something via VOD or theater. But yeah, the mid-August till this week is traditionally just a dry spot for movies. Even action stuff. We didn't talk about Maze Runner, which is lame.
I didn't see it.
Well, good call. in the realm of that category, no wonder it's coming out now and not August or July. So,
and did you say you wanted to mention something else?
Well, just I wanted to mention DVD home viewing, giving our listeners more options. But I got to say, I actually enjoyed the last Furious movie, Furious 7.
Did you?
Paul Walker's farewell. They did a nice tribute to him at the end.
Farewell.
You know, but the thing that's always bothered me about these movies is that the first six I've gone to, and I've walked out of the theater and seen young guys in their teens and their 20s get into cars and drive really fast and it glamors, but this movie is so over the top silly that it couldn't possibly inspire.
I don't know. Adam's sitting there. Don't get him going. He's got a thing about supercars with N's on the back of them. He takes pictures of them.
I don't know anything about cars. I know you could put a McLaren in front of me I wouldn't know. But this one was silly and over the top. I found it a lot more enjoyable to be seven movies in and still actually get a critic like me going, okay, I give it a 7 out of 10.
Who's watching those movies, teenage boys?
And their girls.
And their girlfriends.
And a lot of people that were teenagers that watched the first one in, 2001?
Yeah, I guess.
They're now in their 30s or late 20s, and they're still going. As I said, I've always criticized these movies, this franchise, for glamorizing fast driving, but this is so over the top silly.
That you can't possibly. It's cartoonish.
It's cartoonish. Thank you. That's what I'm going to say. So, yeah, for me, a 7 out of 10. But next week, we got more good movies, I think.
We do. We'll have to figure out what we're going to talk about next week, because what are we? You're away, and I'm...
I can call from Toronto, where I'll be. Happy to do that.
He's happy to do that. Well, there you go. On that note, and Jim Gordon looking like the great man that he is.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right, talk to you next week. Okay, that's it for this episode of the DGP with me, Dana G. Now, before I go, I would like to thank, of course, Adam Foster, who tirelessly sits next to me, but he's yawning right now, so that can't be true. He is tired. I'd like to thank Billy the Exterminator. You know, go and try to get on his show. I think it would be fun. And Drew and Jonathan Scott from the Property Brothers. And, of course, Jim Gordon from CTV. Now, go ahead and download the show next week and check out my interview with Design Guru. I didn't make that title up. And, yes, it is a thing. Tommy Smythe. You'll recognize him from the guy who wears the natty bow tie and is always with Sarah Richardson on her shows. He's chatting with us. And also, very excited to introduce a new segment to the DGP. Local bon vivant we're going to have on once a month. And the segment's called, it includes his name, the segment's called What Are You Loving, Stephen Schelling? Trust me, you need you'll need to listen to this one because it will be fun. Expect a lot of laughs. Okay, so that's it for us. Go ahead and check us out at theprovince.com/podcast or on Stitcher, iTunes, and TuneIn. Oh, and Periscope. Adam said, and Periscope. I always forget one, don't I, Adam? There's a lot. Anyways, thanks a lot for listening, and keep it real.
You've been listening to the DGP, hosted by province writer Dana G. Follow Dana on Twitter at Dana_G or read her stories on theprovince.com. Subscribe to this and other great province podcasts by searching iTunes or clicking the links available on theprovincepodcasts.com.